The Guardian.
During April, The Guardian's podcasts are partnering with audible.co.uk. Audible has over 60,000 digital audiobooks and are offering Guardian podcast listeners one for free. Visit guardian.co.uk/audible to find out more.
Hello, this is Music Weekly from The Guardian. I'm Alexis Petridis.
And I'm Kieran Yates.
Coming up, Kieran will be talking to Elijah from Rinse FM duo Elijah and Skillium about his grime label Butters. I'll be trying to keep the pop group's Mark Stewart on the subject of his new solo album The Politics of Envy. And we'll be forming a club and listening to three singles in, yes, that's right, Singles Club.
That's all here on Music Weekly from The Guardian.
Joining us this week, we have Tim Jones. Hello, Tim.
Hello, how are you?
I'm all right, man. How are you?
Very good.
What have you been doing? What's been happening?
What have I been doing?
Yeah.
I'm still recovering from when I saw Drake the other week.
How much did you enjoy that?
Did you cry?
Someone said that they spotted me at the gig and I was the only person not dancing.
Wow.
I felt quite self-conscious when I was
two of us, if that. Did you enjoy it?
It was very entertaining.
Did you scream?
In my head. In my heart.
Did you go and see Drake? Yep. We all went to see Drake.
Yep.
It was the hottest ticket in town that night.
So hot.
Did you enjoy it?
Yep. Always enjoy Drake.
Cool. what else has been going on? What are the big stories this week?
This week, there is, well, Odd Future on Newsnight.
The thing that I thought was best about Odd Future on Newsnight was the final quote.
Yeah. Yeah, that guy was really excited.
Amazing.
Who was he?
I thought, really good.
Bad hair.
Yeah, bad, terrible. You know, I got my
Was
hair
he
done.
In Odd Future? He looked like he was.
I did very much look like a sort of young. No, it was a funny old interview.
It was slightly odd. Yeah.
But I think if I was Odd Future, I'd be over the moon with it.
Yeah, really. It made them look good.
What did you think, yeah. Kieran?
I think that. Kind of when Newsnight try and do those kind of youth culture segments, they always end up getting it pretty wrong for that real reason. You just get this real sense that, you know, Steve Smith was really excited to set them up for a bit of a fall. And I think it kind of backfired a little bit. I don't know. I just find it all a bit patronising, really.
You wouldn't go and do a classical thing or a political thing with that kind of attitude, really, would you?
No. I don't know. I thought if you'd been a 15-year-old kid watching that with your parents, a peculiar 15-year-old kid that watches Newsnight with his parents, I would have thought you'd have thought that was just the most amazing. Odd Future were just the most amazing band you'd ever seen, ever.
Yeah, they were really funny.
I think Malik wants to get T-shirts printed up with... just stuff to piss old white people off like you.
Anyway, moving swiftly on. Mark Stewart has taken some time out recently after reforming seminal post-punk band The Pop Group, but don't confuse time out with resting. He's been hard at it, recording the album The Politics of Envy with collaborators including Lee Scratch Perry and Bobby Gillespie. Amazing if he had those two on together. He should, in fairness, be exhausted, but as you will hear, exhaustion is not a word in Mark Stewart's vocabulary.
I can't believe that my name is amongst these people. For me, I'm still the 14-year-old kid who was reading Kenneth Anger's Hollywood Babylon and listening to Richard Hell's stuff with television, Little Johnny Jewel, and buying like Lee Perry dubs. And to actually be in the same room with these people is shocking, let alone seeing that they're on my record and they like me. You know, it's like the best group of mates you could possibly have.
I mean, musicians are one thing, but Kenneth Anger is a different thing entirely. What was that like, working with him?
Well, the crazy thing is, with this other kind of Dada art collective I'm part of in Portugal called Mechanosphere, we organised a symposium on magic and art in homage to Kenneth. Mm-hmm. And we got artists from all over the world, and we did all these big performances across the old quarter of Lisbon and in Porto. And Kenneth came and did a theremin performance with me in Mechanosphere. And I just really liked Kenneth's kind of playfulness. And he was just wearing this kind of weird Guantanamo suit. And he still got his quiff.
Really? Right?
And for me, everybody makes Kenneth out to be this kind of dark, Darth Vader type,
yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Sort of sinister, kind of Satanist, being nasty about.
I'm not
Hollywood,
a Christian myself, but for me, his one act of juxtaposition of he was saying to me, he said he was living at his parents' house and he was making his homoerotic biker film, Scorpio Rising, right? And by chance, a Super 8 of a Jehovah's Witness film arrived at his parents' house by mistake. This of Jesus walking on these palm leaves. And he just decided to cut it into this biker thing. And that one act of juxtaposition changed reality. I mean, you know, the Pistols used to show it, Jamie Reed. I mean, juxtaposition is the name of the game. I mean, from juxtaposition, you get sparks. And people say that I do this and I've created that genre or this genre will influence this or that. But all I'm doing is like, naively, playfully, just trying to put a square brick in a round hole, and sparks are interesting.
You talk about the influence that you've had. Do you think much about your legacy? Do you? I mean, presumably, if you're working with kind of, you know, people that have been influenced by you,
yeah,
you know, that are very open about that kind of thing, you must be kind of confronted by it to a degree. I mean, is it something you think about, the degree of influence that you've had?
No, I mean, what happened was that I was living in Berlin, and this kind of. It turned into a kind of dogma film about the kind of weird kind of bingo halls with my relatives, right? But I thought he was making a kind of documentary. But he wanted to talk to Bjork and Trent Reznor and Nick Cave was in it and blah, blah, blah. All I know is it's quite nice that when we phone up one of these new kind of future bass kids like Khan, who's on this record, or Pinch, who's just done a remix, they're like, yeah, for Mark, we'll do anything. They didn't even ask for the taxi money. People were just there, you know. I think the influence that punk and post-punk had going up to like Matt Groening, who makes The Simpsons, to like Japanese politicians, you know, it's crazy that there's kind of simpatico people in positions of power at the moment, which is great from our generation and new generations.
You got involved in music from a very young age. I mean, you were young when you were in the pop group. Do you think you've changed?
I still feel the same person.
Really?
A lot of these people are actually older than me. I mean, like Daddy, like Grant is one of my best mates from Massive Attack, Danny G, and we kind of swap clothes because we're both so tall, but he's actually like a year older than me. I was like the young kid in school, but they didn't start doing stuff until their 20s. I mean, we started, you know, I could go clubbing when I was 11 because I'm so tall. Yeah. I think my brain is a bit too fast.
You'd never guess. So what is it like? I mean, it's an interesting thing because you've got a new album and you're playing with the pop group at the same time, yeah?
No. What's happening is we've got this new album, The Politics of Envy, right? And it was made with lots of different collaborators around the world, from Lee Scratch Perry, Primal Scream, Daddy G, Jesus Mary Chain, Factory Floor, blah, 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 right? But underneath it is still this is the kind of punk rock me, right? So at the moment, what I'm doing is I found the most amazing rhythm section I've found since I've worked with the Sugar Hill Rhythm Section. These guys called Arkell and Hargreaves, right? And they're actually doing dubstep, post-dubstep noises, sub-basses, live, with real instruments. And it's like, just in the rehearsals, it's like being when those astronauts go in those speed tunnels and your face is pulled. The guy's lip is wobbling like a vagina, as it's kind of wobbling and dripping, and stuff is dripping out of it. Do you know what I mean? It's beyond sex. My sphincter is... I love it, because I'm a bass head. Do you know what I mean?
Of course.
I poached them from this grime outfit called the True Tigers. So this year, I'm doing the Mark Stewart stuff, but at the same time, we're writing pop group stuff, and we've just got all our catalogue back. So next year, there'll be a lot of pop group activity. Mm-hmm. Well, not a lot. It's just like we have to do kind of big ATPs and, you know.
Sure. Does it feel different writing stuff with a pop group than writing stuff on your own? Do you work in a different way?
It was quite shocking for me because when somebody suggested Barry from All Tomorrow's Parties, like I was saying, Matt Groening, the creator of The Simpsons, was curating this big festival called All Tomorrow's Party, and he could choose any band. It's like when Morrissey got the New York Dolls to reform, right? He asked me to reform the pop group and Iggy to reform the Stooges. I was chatting to Iggy about it, and Iggy had no intention of doing the Stooges at all, right? But at that time, I was doing these kind of art things when you'd be sent to Vancouver and you have to collaborate with a kind of South Korean artist with a tub of lard and make something like Jackanory, you know. And so I just thought, why should I cut out the potential of being commissioned to make something that I already, to make stuff with people I've worked with before? Why should I be
so?
Because I'm always questioning my own construct. And so me and Gareth have been messing about in the studio, and a completely weird, another beast has arisen, which is nothing to do with our past, nothing to do with us, and all these huge kind of French ballads are coming out for some, like,
is that
big,
what is it, really?
Stringy kind of ballads are coming out, and I'm like, let them go. Honestly, it's really weird. I'm just thinking, let them live, let the hype, you know, and suddenly you can just let something go, and it's bizarre.
It is the last thing that people are going to expect, the pop group. Because, I mean, you know, people have a very fixed image of this incredibly combustible, you know, funky but off-kilter funk that you used to do.
Yeah.
And also, you know, it's not like your solo work is renowned for its sort of chansonnier-like quality with the best will in the world. So, I mean, this is completely from left field. I mean, this is
mental.
Totally different.
That's the whole point, is you cannot... I mean, what's quite frustrating for me is that people kind of stereotype you as a kind of angry... opinionated artist or something, but beneath all my stuff is the kind of joy of funk and reggae. I mean, I grew up in funk and reggae clubs, and all I wanted to do from when I was a kid was have like an uplifting bass line from like the Fatback Band with some kind of, or a really cool kind of mystical dub, but with something interesting on the top instead of Shake Your Booty. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, there's anything
wrong with shaking your booty, especially yours. We're actually in the nude here in The Guardian. It's Dress Down Friday.
Bass music still excites you as much as it did. Is that a Bristol thing? Is that a growing up in Bristol? I mean, it does seem to be very specifically produced a certain... just people with a certain head on them. You know what I mean?
It's. I mean, that city is wobbling. I mean, you know, the areas I hang around in, there's a car going past playing some reggaeton, then somebody else is playing some booty bass, and there's future bass. And I mean, the wave, I mean, there's Joker, there's Pinch, who I've recently worked, there's Apple Blim, right? It's like... another wave, and the Japanese are going mad for it. This stuff is out there. I mean, it's in Germany, all the kind of intellectuals, all the kind of theorists are studying things like Shackleton and Burial. I mean, here it's a kind of street music, which is great, right?
Yeah.
And one of my favorite musics at the moment is what they call Desi, which is a kind of Indian Pakistani mix of raga, reggaeton, bass music. You know, this thing is it's like when we were kids, it's the same as, you know, glam, it's street punk.
Yeah. I mean, it's really interesting, though, because all those artists you talk about, Apple, Blim, Joker, have a really distinct take on bass music, on dubstep, whatever you want to call it, that keys back into exactly the same kind of the stuff that you were doing in the 80s, the stuff that the Massive Attack were doing. You know, it just seems that whatever genre comes along, Bristol takes it and puts a slightly, you know what I mean, a bit of a weird swerve on it.
Yeah.
Why?
I think... that town, because it's small enough that people aren't kind of ghettoized, that there was, when we were kids, there was only one late night club, the Dugout. So there'd be posh rich kids, there'd be Indian kids, there'd be, you know, people from every part of Bristol, different gangs, leaders, you know, and everybody would have to mix. I mean, the only town I know like it is when I lived in Geneva, and you'd have like the Crown Prince of Kuwait next to a junkie.
Yeah.
It's the only place to get late drink, so everybody has to kind of talk.
Right, okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I mean, and before that club, we'd all go to this service station when we were like 11 or 12, because it was open all night, you know.
Brilliant.
But it's an interesting city. I mean, going back to Chatter to Blackbeard the Pirate, was, you know, and they say that America is named after the Lord Mayor of Bristol, Alan Merrick, who the merchant venturers paid for the first ships to go over there. Wow. You know, it's like, that's why all the Americans got a Bristol burr. That's why they all talk a bit Bristolian. Like,
that's a very Bristol thing to say, that all Americans have Bristol, a Bristol boys. Accent, if you don't mind my saying. You obviously work you talk about working in a lot of different art forms. What does music do uniquely? What can music do uniquely that the sort of work you do in other art forms, whether it's interventionist art or whatever, can't do?
For me, it's a nutrient. you can put on something like Shalimar or The Congos by Lee Perry first thing in the morning, and it just makes the whole, it brings out rainbows and makes the whole day, it's a new tune. I feed off, you know, sometimes I play the same record 4 or 5 times and I can't go out. I mean, you know, it's like when you're a kid, you rush and buy something. I remember when Anarchy in the UK came out, it was just like, I've got to have this. And it just, it lives, you know, I did something with Bobby Gillespie when we were talking about when we were kids, right? And he was going, it'd make him skip to school in the morning, just these certain songs, you know. And there's the uplifting side of it, so you're getting the nutrient of the energy, of the positivity and the hope, right? But then if you can say something interesting, when it's like a suspension of disbelief or flipnosis, if you can say something interesting in that stage, you know, I think it's great. And I think the kind of music we make and the kind of, you know, since punk and the post-punk period and the kind of networks through Rough Trade and what we did as with the pop group and the Raincoats did, and there's a certain integrity to it, which people, it's more like comrades instead of somebody's here on the stage and somebody's there, you know. And the best thing for me is, you know, if you're touring around South America or something, somebody comes up to you and says, hearing your stuff in this tiny town makes me think I'm not the only nutter, I'm not completely outside. And I got that from the New York Dolls and stuff. It's this sense of community, you know. You belong inside the music.
That was Alexis talking to Mark Stewart, and The Politics of Envy is out now on Future Noise. Let's move on to Singles Club. Tim, we'll start with your track.
That's Jay Paul and Jasmine. Tim, that's your choice.
Yes, it is.
Tell the world about Jay Paul.
Jay Paul's he's quite a reclusive guy. He lives in Rainer's Lane. I really admire his lack of productivity. He really is not. He's not doing the overtime at the moment. He's. I think it was about a year ago that his last record came out, which was called BTSU. BTSU.
BTSTU, I think. But okay. I don't know.
Yeah.
Which was great. And Drake sampled it, didn't he? Drake used it to make a track, and it felt like he had a bit of momentum behind him, but he didn't go for it, did he? He's just stayed back, and now he's come out with this, which is a demo, I think.
It sounds like a demo.
Yeah. Although that's kind of, I think, the sound he's going for anyway, I think. That kind of muffly, slightly underwater, weird.
Sort of like an R&B dreamy version of Aerial Pink.
Yes, totally. Yeah. Totally.
It's always like he's got this real fear of kind of too much attention on him. Because I remember a few years ago, he had his MySpace and he had that BTSTU track on it. And then he had another one called Jungle Drummer. And then he had kind of another little sampley one. And then as soon as there was lots of attention, you know, those tracks went off immediately.
Right.
And then the other day on his Facebook, you know, he released like a minute of another sample track, which was then off within, you know, a few hours.
I think he's one of these rare artists who genuinely, they are just obsessed with making music, and they find the whole thing that goes with it quite annoying that they have.
Is this, for people who haven't heard the rest of his mysterious oeuvre, is this, you know, is this like stuff he's done previously? Is this what you can expect?
Yeah, I mean, there's not that much that people have heard, I don't think. But yeah, I'd say this is pretty infinite. I mean, it's kind of what you'd hope Prince would be making, I guess.
Now?
Yeah, in a dream scenario.
In a dream scenario.
I think. Personally.
I think it also reminded me a little bit of a band we've discussed numerous times on the podcast, Gangs. Gangs, however you pronounce it. It's got that sort of weird, it's like R&B via Gangs, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Or via Aerial Pink or one of those slightly more hauntological kind of groups.
Definitely.
Kieran, you're a fan. Clearly.
Yes.
You can tell us about him.
I'm a big fan. Yeah, what I like about him is that he's that kind of warped pop star in every sense of the word. You know, it sounds like warped, it sounds very synthy, it sounds like these kind of sighs and echoes, which I really like. It's not really in your face, but alongside that, it has the ability to really be massive and to kind of really hook you in. And I think that it's the kind of track which you can listen to over and over again, you know, without being, you know, like a techno nerd and not listening for, you know, every little echo and every little drop. You can just kind of take it for what it is, which is quite a beautiful love song, really. And I like that. I mean, there's definitely like you say, that a princey
vibe to him.
Is he sort of a poly? He's like a polymath kind of figure, like Prince. Is he? That's him singing and.
Well, I don't know.
He's just too. Don't know enough about him. Really.
Yeah, that's it. He's signed to
Excel.
He's
certainly not as outgoing.
He's also doing stuff with PMR Records, and he's kind of, you know, in and out doing little bits and bobs. But you know, he's a mystery.
So where can, if your interest has been piqued?
Well, I think it first appeared on Abino.
He still has his old MySpace though. Right, and there was in 2010 there was lots of rumours circulating that he was going to have an EP called Bait Ones, and then it just kind of never surfaced, right. And nothing ever happened, and then he kind of. Went into the ether, fell into
where,
the ether.
Where does this exist within the rich and varied tapestry of British dance music or British urban music? Who are his contemporaries? Who would you compare him to?
Hudson Mohawk, I'd say.
Yeah, right. Maybe Subtract and people like that. Just
it's a bit less in your face than Subtract.
Less in your face. Well, Subtract's not that in your face, is it? What I find fascinating is this is basically, it's quite arty and it's very British. Old. It's a kid in his bedroom, and yet this is. One of the artists that kind of the biggest stars in, you know, US hip hop are actually looking at and, you know, using.
Is he like the Kevin Shields of sort of post dubstep or something?
yes, he is.
Would you think that is an apposite comparison?
No, I think so. Yeah.
You know, people of a certain age. Wonderful. Well, look, Jay Paul, Jasmine, I liked it a lot, incidentally, after that. That was right up my street, actually. That's available now on, you know, if you. Type into Google.
Excellent. The new record shop.
Excellent. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Right, we shall move on to Kieran's tune. Here, and that's Benga with the, I have to say, I find slightly dispiritingly titled, I Will Never Change.
Alexis.
Tell me, it just seems like a bad name for I Will Never Change.
This
you know.
Is what you're going to get
that's
every album.
Yeah, that's what Oasis should have called it. Kieran, tell us why you like this, what's good about it, blah, 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 blah.
So this is from Benga, who is a dubstep DJ and producer. He has kind of been making dubstep for years and years and years from kind of the legendary days of Big Apple Records.
I was going to say, he's one of the original guys.
Yeah, you know, I think he was signed to Big Apple when he was 15. He was like going to the record shop with dub plates when he was like 14. Wow. You know, then he, the kind of big breakout tune was Night, what he did with Koki, which was kind of propelled him into the mainstream. And then that was really cemented dubstep within club culture.
Wasn't he like out DJing when he was like 12 or something?
Yeah, exactly. He was kind of going to Forward with Scream before they were old enough to drink and really old enough to go, and they're being chaperoned by Hatcher and Koki.
Okay. Amazing. Yeah. What a lovely story. there's a lot of this kind of stuff about at the moment, isn't there? I mean, there's a lot of this, some similar
sounding
stuff.
Well, there's not a lot of Benga stuff about.
No, but stuff that sounds a bit like this.
I mean, I guess so. But I mean, I think that what's really special about Benga is that he kind of... retains all these things. Like when you hear this, you know, there's that very clear bass wobbles that you kind of come to know and love if you're a dubstep fan, and you know, those bass drops and kind of a bit of synth, and even this has a little bit of a female vocal on it. But what, you know, what's interesting about this is that it's a real middle ground between those very early Diary of an Afro Warrior kind of albums, which is very at the beginning of dubstep and of that sound, and then, because he's one third of Magnetic Man, if you don't know. Yes, so kind of what you've heard with Magnetic Man, and then with, you know, he produced Katie on a Mission and that kind of thing. So to me, you know, it's got a little snippet of that female vocal. It's got a little snippet of those kind of old, you know, that bass wobble. He was kind of known as the wobble warrior at one time because he used that so heavily. And I think, yeah, that's what, you know, that's what I like. It's like a real middle ground. You can see how this is a dubstep track that can really cross over into mainstream, sound quite poppy and still retain itself. It doesn't have that horrible high pitch frequency stuff that Skrillex has, and it's not quite as dark and brooding as very early Benga stuff, which is what I like about it.
So, Tim, what did you make of this?
I kind of think what Kieran says is maybe the reason why I'm not quite so thrilled with it, because it is almost slightly middle. It does a bit of everything and it positions itself. And to me, because I'm not so well involved with what's going on in dubstep, it just sounds a bit too much like everything I've heard.
I agree.
And it's like even Skrillex, who I used to kind of despise. Actually, I've started quite liking it because I just find it so funny, and it reminds me of Happy Hurt.
The track he did with the Doors, the surviving members of the Doors.
I don't think
it is literally the worst record I've ever heard in my entire life. I previously thought the worst record ever made was Peter Starstead's "Where Do You Go To, My Lovely," and this has actually trumped that. It's an incredible piece of work. I can't recommend you check it out enough. I think my problem with, similarly with Tim's, is that I'm not attuned enough to sort of the, like, almost like micromanagement of sound that sets that apart. I heard that and I thought, you know what, there's kind of a lot of stuff with that wobble on it now. There's a lot of stuff, you know, in the pop charts like that. There's a lot of, you know, you heard it on the Madonna album, you heard it. And I sort of thought, well, maybe it might be better for him to move on or whatever or do something.
But I still feel like this is, you know, it's not very shiny and it's still quite restrained, if you know what I mean. It's got, you know, it's definitely got a catchy bass line, you know, and dubstep's all about those bass lines, which you can hear, and you can hear the drop. And I think that
you can hear everything. Yeah. So crisp, you can hear like every single sound.
That's what
I
like about
it.
I think that, you know, when you've, like what you were saying about Skrillex, what you hear is this kind of, you know, bro step, inverted commas, which is this weird Americanized dubstep, which Ruska's got a great quote. He always says that it sounds like someone screaming in your face for an hour, and, which is, you know, which is exactly, you know, it's full on that kind of, you know, Rusko, Skrillex, you know, Datsik kind of sound, which is you know, what's kind of under the label of bro step, is this is like a real response to that. It's still quite restrained, it's still very crisp, it's very clear, very well produced.
Dance music that makes it in America is always like that. I've noticed if you look at the people that really broke big in America in the 90s, you had this sort of panoply of dance music, you know, the Prodigy, that, you know, which is somebody screaming in your face for an hour. And not that the Prodigy aren't a wonderful group, you know. Chemicals did pretty well over there. It's pretty pound and mash stuff, you know. It's interesting. It's an interesting order. I find that sort of whole world of brostep fascinating, because who would have predicted when, you know, whatever Midnight Request Line or something like that came out, that actually it would find its kind of commercial peak to sort of Hooting Jocks. I mean, it just seems like a really peculiar audience for the, you know, the evolution of it.
I went to Ultra in Miami to cover it last year, and what was one of the weirdest things about it was that you're kind of on this beach in this, you know, hyper shiny, superficial kind of landscape, and you can hear people like, you know, like, yeah, these jocks, you know, these kind of, you know, inverted triangle type guys just being like, oh my god, I'm so excited to hear Benga, I'm so excited to scream, and you're like, really?
Yeah,
it's really weird. It's just, yeah, but I don't know, there's something
I just think it's an evolutionary journey for a style of music that is really, really fascinating, particularly if you look at dubstep as being an end point in a way from sort of like house music or disco or something like that, and you think it's
so
kind of
much dance music as well that America hasn't really taken to heart. Yeah. And then this, which is actually music that I have always thought I wouldn't want to dance to. Like, more than
I sort of thought that. I always thought that with dubstep, because, you know, I don't go clubbing, you know. And then I saw a video of Rusko on YouTube live. Live DJing. And I thought, actually, yeah, I can see why. You know, it sort of looked a bit like kind of the way people used to react to Big Beat. Yeah, or something like that. You can kind of see how that would work. Whereas earlier dubstep stuff, I just sort of, oh, what the fuck is it like in a club when they play this?
That's amazing, because when you go to, you know, Forward, you know, they have, you know, it's a very small space, and, you know, of course, dubstep is so, it's so dependent on good sound systems, and
right.
be, you know, there was this wall that was just kind of known as like a wobble wall, because you could just hear the bass and you could kind of hear it rattling behind your ribcage and kind of on your nose, and, you know, that I think that that's, I don't know, it's so key to club culture, and it's so key to kind of hearing, you know, hearing great music and really feeling it and being in a great space and hearing it clearly and hearing it quite loudly and hearing everything. And what I like about dubstep is, like, for me, I'm not a massive technical geek, but, you know, there's definitely sounds that I can hear. Like this video, which is a video that I really love, is just basically, you know, 960 pieces of vinyl, which, what's that thing? It's like stop frame animation.
Yeah.
And it kind of creates a physical waveform, and you can see it, and it kind of creates the waveform.
It is a brilliant video, to
the bass line. And those kind of things, I think anybody can really appreciate, and I really like that. Whereas when I hear disco, I can't necessarily pick out technical bits of it, or even house. I can't really, I don't listen for that. But I think dubstep is a really nice way to introduce you to all those things
that
you might.
The ears of a younger generation. That can pick out the bits of dubstep, but it's like disco. Anyway, whatever. That's amazing. Well, there you go. I Will Never Change by Benga is out.
It's part of the. It's from the album Chapter 2, which is out in August.
Chapter 2, I Will Never Change. You can't have it both ways, mate. It's Chapter 2 same as Chapter 1, is that what you're saying?
Continuation rather than another book, isn't it?
I Will Never Change. So that's out. Sorry, when did you say
August.
That again? August. But you can find this on the. You can certainly find the video
yep.
on the internet, which I do wholeheartedly recommend. I think between that and Nicki Minaj's Stupid Ho, probably my two favourite videos of the year. What's funny about that?
When you say stupid
hoes. What? Okay. Anyway, right, okay. Let's listen to my track.
That was Alexis's choice, Richard Hawley with Leave Your Body Behind You. Alexis.
Yeah, I am an unequivocal fan of Richard Hawley. I think he's brilliant. But I think what I particularly like about his forthcoming album and his previous album is that I think I always thought I had Richard Hawley's measure as a singer-songwriter. And it's like, okay, you do these big kind of Roy Orbison-y ballads, basically, and you do them incredibly well, and that's all you're going to do, you know what I mean? And the album... its name, the one with Tonight the Streets Are Ours on it. I kind of thought he'd reached the end of, you know, what he could do with that and wondered where he'd go next. And he came out with, it's probably my favourite album, I think, of 2009. And it's like, this is a real departure. You've done something really different here. You have these incredibly long songs with these weird instruments on them that still retain all the sort of warmth and humanity. I think he's an incredibly human writer and I think he's a brilliant. You know, if you meet him, he is just like the sort of...
He's a great pop star.
He's an amazing pop star. But he's like an amazing pop star and like the bloke you'd meet in the snug of a pub. You know what I mean? He's just watched the world go by.
You mean presence-wise? He just has a great presence about him.
He's just a lovely, lovely, lovely human being. But there's something... There's something... I mean,
he's like just very Sheffield and very funny, isn't he?
Incredibly funny.
Like the Arctic Monkeys are.
Yeah. Unbelievably foul-mouthed, incredibly friendly. Obviously, looks like a teddy boy. You know, his massive quiff and stuff like that. I liked him as much as I've ever liked anybody I went to interview. You know, he was trying to get me to stay. I had to go back to Brighton. He was sort of trying to get me to miss my last train back to Brighton so I could go to the pub. It was like best pub in the world. It's just a pub, you know. But anyway. And I think what he's done with this album is really interesting. He's sort of made a psychedelic record. Again, it's sort of longer songs. It's much heavier. You know, his early stuff was sort of 50s to mid-60s influenced. It had sort of marked people like Gene Pitney, Roy Orbison, that kind of thing, as well as early rock and roll, which he's a massive fan of. You can tell by the way he looks. And he just does it really well. He's a brilliant guitarist. I think that's something that, you know, famous story, he plays guitar on... was it Under the Bridge? All Saints cover Under the Bridge. Yeah. And I just really like his ability to keep... For someone that I thought only did one thing, his ability to keep moving while retaining... Sort of, he's got great lyrics, this brilliant sort of worldview in his lyrics, this kind of humanity about what he does. I find that fantastic. I shall throw this open to the floor. Tim!
I love Richard Hawley. I agree with everything you say. I'm even rocking a quiff today, which
I would like
one day to grow into one as splendid as his. But this song and this album, there's basically only one song I really love on this new album, and that's called Seek It.
Yeah.
And that, it sounds like old Richard
Hawley. Right.
I think he's one of those few artists where I'd be quite happy for him to make a similar record over and over again, because I think he's so good at what he does.
Mm-hmm.
And I did like True Love's Gutter, even though it was more experimental, because I think at least it retained his voice. And with all the psychedelic stuff, his voice is quite low in the mix. And it just, to me, it sounds a bit like a Britpop record. It's not quite Cooler Shaker, but it's almost, I mean, this almost sounds like the Seahorses.
I'll tell you what I thought it actually sounded like, a bit, but it's better than, like the way the Arctic Monkeys sound now. Actually.
Yeah,
I thought there was an element of that when it's, you know.
I just don't want him to rock out.
And
I do think his voice going so far lost in that kind of psychedelic thing, it just becomes another... old-fashioned sounding record rather than, you know, he's always been really old-fashioned, but it just used to, you know, the melody shone and his lyrics shone a bit more.
Okay, fair enough. Kieran?
Yeah, well, see, Alexis, I thought this was so close to being a perfect singles week because I love Tim's choice. And I thought, oh, come on, Alexis, but no.
Don't like it.
Yeah. No, I think I agree with Tim in that it just seems like a really, really dense sound that's totally enveloping and just like a really long drone. And it feels like it's kind of interesting about what we were talking about dubstep before, because I can't, with this, I just couldn't pick out all those individual sounds of kind of guitar or all that instrumentation that you really liked about it. It just felt like this real wall of noise and I just couldn't really get to grips with it. And that kind of psychedelic thing just sounded so dated and it didn't sound like he was doing anything too fresh with it. And no, you can't hear the voice, which I guess is what kind of identifies him so well. And like you say, you know, his personality, he's got such presence and he's funny and, you know, he's really, you know, he's got that, all that thing about him, which I didn't really hear in this. Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, I'm coming from a totally new ear, like I don't know any Richard Hawley at all. So this was like my first thing that I'd heard and I just thought, oh God.
Like, in fairness to Richard Hawley, it's quite hard to play that record after you've heard Benga and J-Pop. It's always going to sound a bit dated.
It's just everything's happening. It's just like this big guitar, this huge drone. And I just thought, God, if I wasn't, even if I was like listening to this on a bigger sound system, it would just be like way too much. Like it's too much on the headphones. So
it's an interesting thing. I mean, I would say in defense, that's kind of what psychedelia is about, is a huge enveloping droning thing. I mean, the other thing that I think probably endears this record to me is that I'm a massive fan of sort of 60s psychedelia. I love kind of particularly British psychedelia from about sort of 65 to 68. It's probably my favourite sort of music. That and disco are probably my two favourite kinds of music ever. And so it's kind of a bit like he's made a record to please me. You know what I mean? It's like he sat up there in Sheffield thinking, well, Alexis Petridis, it's like, I'm a cool psychedelic.
Disco is great because you can dance to it and it's really fun and upbeat. But, you know, psychedelia traditionally is very indulgent music, isn't it? It's quite self. I don't feel like you can do anything other than just kind of sit back and let it wash over you. Like, what? Do you know what I mean? What's its place?
Yeah, what's its place?
That's a nice place, though, isn't it? I like music to sit back wash over me.
I think you just get
it's quite a lot, like, though.
Yeah, that's a film of people at the UFO Club in 1967, sort of dancing to Pink Floyd, which is kind of amazing. Anyway, blah, 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 blah. We will be having a psychedelic special later in the year.
Because can't wait, Kieran.
45th world. Oh, maybe you'll go on a journey. Maybe you'll expand your mind. Turn off your mind, relax, and float downstream. Anyway, there you go. Richard Hawley, Leave Your Body Behind You is available now. Now, in the last show, way back before Easter, we had Labyrinth in to talk about stuff. Musa Okwonga got on the comments page to say, I really admire the scope of influences that Labyrinth draws upon, which will ensure his longevity as an artist, but I feel it underrates grime as a genre. There's plenty of complexity hidden beneath a simple surface. The very best grime reminds me of some of the production you'd hear from Wu-Tang at their peak. It's a very apposite comparison. John DPM was not surprised by Labyrinth being down on grime. There's a regular occurrence now that anyone who elevates, inverted commas, themselves above the genre, i.e. signing with a major, speaks down about it. Is that true, Kieran? Do you think people... There definitely seems to be a sense that people do leave grime behind, in pursuit of greater commercial success. I mean, Dizzy did it, Tinchy did it.
Some artists that kind of cross over to the mainstream. I think that there's always that. There's always diehard fans will always want you to retain a sense of that, won't they? Because it's, you know, it's kind of their breakout sound. But I think it's quite a fashionable thing though to say that, you know, grime was so much better in
back
the early
in the day.
Yeah,
course,
like
yeah.
like it always is.
Well, like
so.
In everything. Yeah.
Yeah, so you know, I think that just goes in line with that really.
Okay, Joe Ripcord was expecting our Jeremy Deller interview to be terrible. He says, all I knew was that he was a Turner Prize artist, but actually I loved it. Where can I get my hands on that Brass Band Acid Jazz stuff? That was phenomenal. I don't know if that's still available. It came out quite a long time ago, the Acid Brass album. I'm sure if you have file sharing sites, I'm sure somewhere you can find them. The Fairly Brass Band, whatever it is doing, What Time Is Love. Your thoughts on this week's show, as ever, be gentle, at guardian.co.uk/musicweekly. Right, Kieran, you went to interview Elijah from Elijah and Skilliam. Is it Skilliam or Skill-I-Am?
Skill-I-Am.
Oh, God. Skilliam, because his name's William.
Right. Yeah. He should have thought of doing Skill I Am, because then it would still be a pun on his name, William.
That would be
And also
hilarious.
A pun on Will I Am. It's a brilliant, you know. I just, you should tell him I said that.
You're an ideas man.
I am. I'm just, this is why I was wasted. I should have had, I should have a career in A&R.
Skill I Am is great.
Skill I Am is brilliant. Skill I Am. It's a Grange Hill kind of thing. Anyway, tell us all about Elijah and Skilliam.
Okay, so Elijah and Skilliam are grime DJs on Rinse FM. But Elijah is the label head of the biggest grime label, Butters. They've done things with Swindle and Royalty and P Money, and they've done lots of grime instrumentals and kind of grime stuff with vocals. And they're really at the forefront of where the sound is developing. So whenever...
that to me is interesting, in that 2 years is a very short space of time to become the leading label in grime, which is a genre that's been going on for like 10 years, you know? So what have they done to...
Well, it's because, you know, you've had... You know, people like Big Apple, who were doing, you know, they did dubstep predominantly. And so there were kind of grime influenced grime instrumentals coming out of there. And then there was pirate radio, which was where you would go. And of course, with the medium of dub plates, it's such a transient medium, isn't it? Because after you've used them a while, you can't, these things just kind of get lost in the ether, don't they? Mm-hmm. And so I think that they just really saw a gap in the market, and they released vinyl and they also released digitally. And I think that that's a really interesting thing of kind of just grabbing everything together. And I think whenever people say, you know, oh, you know, where is grime going now? You know, who are these new MCs? Butters is the first place that I always say, look, this is, you know, you have to really explore what they're doing, because, you know, the producers that they're working with are completely forward looking and the sounds are really exciting. And, you know, I think they're going, you know, they're going to New York next week. They you know, do graves in Europe all the time. You know, there's a real market for that sound.
Okay. Well, look, one of the interesting things about them is, despite having been on Rinse since 2008, unlike other presenters on the station, Elijah keeps it, he just plays grime, yeah? That's his thing.
Just grime.
Let's hear him talk about that.
Every DJ plays a bit of everything, so I thought it'd be cool to kind of have genre-specific DJs again. Like, when I was growing up, you had, you know, jungle DJs, garage DJs, grime DJs, dubstep DJs, but nowadays, everyone plays a bit of everything. No one really is committing themselves to any genre, but I thought, like, when I was coming through, it'd be cool to just say, look, I'm going to do this and bring through a few new people in, like, the thing that I'm most passionate about.
Me, one of the, like, I guess the, like, the failures and the successes of grime, which makes it so special, is that there, like you say, there are all these kind of pirate radios that are sort of lost in the ether, and you really need to search them out. You need to kind of hope that someone was recording, you know, a show kind of a few years ago and that it exists somewhere on the internet.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole, like, generation of lost music because it was only being broadcasted in such a small area. People forget that for the first, like, 5 years of the music, it wasn't even being broadcast out of London, or there wasn't internet streams and, you know, podcasts and stuff like that. So there's so much music and DJs that never really have been recorded. So, like, I used to listen to stations that don't even exist anymore, have no, like, record of it on the internet or Wikipedia or anything, and I couldn't even tell you their names just because I just, you know, flicked the dial on FM. It's crazy.
Does it almost make it more special? Because sometimes people have that attitude towards dub plates, don't they? Because, you know, they degenerate. And so there's this idea that there's this tune that can be lost and, you know, 100 plays down the road, it's going to be gone forever.
Yeah, it's kind of like the advantage of starting late, because everything that I've done has been recorded. So a lot of people have come across me through, you know, the internet, through Google, whatever. It's crazy when some of them who are, like, you know, gods to me, they come up to me and, like, raise and say, look, I've been listening to you. They're kind of unknown now, and I'm the known one. It's a bit mad.
Because obviously, okay, you guys have got a Rinse show, and it's called Elijah and Skilliam,
yeah.
And you sort of DJ, so it's you and Skilliam, and you sort of go across Europe, and, you know, there's a massive market, I guess, for grime in Europe. Was that surprising? Because I think that a lot of people are really like, what? Grime's big in Poland,
yeah,
or
we,
Paris,
like,
or whatever.
With Skilliam, we kind of, like, follow the dubstep circuit, and, like, I don't think they listen to it and hear a different genre. They might just hear, you know, UK. So, like, a person in Holland is not, like, separating funky and dubstep and grime like that. Whereas here, we break up everything. And America is the same kind of thing. Like, they have, like, hip-hop and dance, and that's it. Whereas over here, we break up everything. UK hip-hop, UK funky, grime, dubstep, this, that.
And what do you think of that? Is that enabling to the scene or not?
for people coming through, it's easier because at the top of hip hop is Jay-Z. But then you think of all the million rappers underneath. So at the top of Grime, it would be like Dizzy Rascal. It would be easier for people to break through if it was broken up into small bits rather than just Grime, Dubstep, House. Because it would be too hard for anyone to compete with Wiley, Scream, someone from House. Do you know what I mean? It's good to have a kind of breakdown.
Let's talk a little bit about the label.
Yeah.
So Butters, it's been going for 2 years now.
Yeah, 2 years this month, and we've had music out from P-Money, Trim, Terry Danger, guy called Swindle.
And then Elijah and Skilliam did the most recent Rinse CD, Rinse 17.
That's like my proudest moment as a DJ. The label is like, I lead it, but I feel like it's like everyone's. So Rinse 17 is like my baby.
Is there this idea that because you're the most prestigious grime label at the moment, that grime artists should be signed to you? So like DW should be signed to you, JME should be signed to you. Like,
no, definitely. But I like the fluidity of having no roster or like artists to look after, because we can, you know, phone up someone and do a track with them, or, you know, go to their house and see what they're working with, and work with a lot of new people as well. Like we done like a remix with this guy called Predator last August, and now he's like well known. I like having like a blank page every time we want to do a release.
What's your opinion of a more sort of commercial pop sound that's been kind of inextricably linked with grime over the last 5 years or so?
I hear music sometimes and I think, oh, you could have only made that if you went through the whole pirate radio system. And I like that, because only a London MC could make that type of track. Those are the kind of tracks that I'm attracted to in the pop world from urban artists. Not really the things that anyone, you know, a guy from Detroit could make, or a guy from, you know, Belgium could make. I just think, or anyone could do that. I might listen to, you know, like a new song. I think, well, that's the break from old jungle tune. And I think those tunes are sick because they're reworking something in like to a new audience. But there's things where, you know, they're sampling like an obvious, you know, 70s dance hit or whatever, like I'm not really into.
One of the things that I like about Butters is that there is this kind of affiliation with vinyl. Like you still put out vinyl. And I think that it's interesting in the kind of digital age, like, you know, one of the most obvious examples, I guess, being JME, who just released, you know, one of his singles, which only exists digitally. And I think that that's like a move where the music industry is really going digital. And I think that it's quite rare that people are putting out vinyl. So what's your relationship with that, and can you sustain it?
I hope so. I haven't done a release without vinyl yet. And like the reason I love it is because that's where I've come from as well. So I know that, you know, a generation 5 years younger than me, they don't understand why I do it. I think, oh, just hurry up and put the digital out. But a lot of the times it does screw plans up and delay things, but it does solidify a product like in history, man. Like we did the release with Ramadan Man. That was only available like 1,000 white labels, and that went in a couple of weeks, and just the people that have that will love it forever. Like, not to say that people that have the MP3 won't love it forever, but they'll have like a connection with that product that you can't find in digital music. And vinyl, hopefully we can keep it going. Like, we're the only real grime label really going with it. So it's hard.
It's hard. I think, yeah, Ramadan Man made that point about a lot of the time clubs and venues, they just don't have the facilities for vinyl. Like, you'll go there, and even if you want to play, you know, the decks are broken or the sound's not good, or they just can't facilitate it in the right way. Do you ever find that?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I play like with Serato's and CDJs, but then I go and do certain sets where, you know, I play all vinyl, so, and it would changed the way I select and changed a lot of the way the music I play, because a lot of grime I only own on vinyl. So if I went to, you know, Plastic People and did a vinyl only set, it's going to sound totally different to the stuff that I'm playing on Rinse. So like, people appreciate both sides. I'm not, you know, crate digging every week and having the opportunity to play certain tunes.
It's heavy as well. It's heavy. It's too heavy to be like carrying around London.
Yeah, well, that all the DJs that I liked growing up, they must have been doing that on a bus, you know, paying £1 to go to Pirate Radio with a sports bag and, you know, DJing in a kitchen with a rice cooker. I've seen it myself. So, hello, like, a rice cooker in the background and all this kind of crazy stuff. So, I think it's cool.
And you can hear Elijah and Skilliam, or as I believe he'll be calling himself after hearing this podcast, Skill I Am, on Friday mornings from 1 to 2am on Rinse of... I don't know, I'm laughing at that. Of course you would. You, why wouldn't you be up at 1am on a Friday morning on Rinse FM, or adopt a normal sleeping pattern and download the podcast? That makes much more sense. There is a sort of listen again feature. Great. Details of all that on our blog. That's it for this week. Thanks to Tim Jones. Thank you, Tim.
Thank you very much.
Let us know your thoughts, as ever, at guardian.co.uk/musicweekly. Thank you very much, as ever.
Thanks.
So, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.
During April, The Guardian's podcasts are partnering with audible.co.uk. Audible has over 60,000 digital audiobooks and are offering Guardian podcast listeners one for free. Visit guardian.co.uk/audible to find out more.